beginning of time, our very humanity has been based on connecting at the cellular level. Today, connecting on a cellular level has taken on a different meaning.
Welcome to the third season of the Know It for Life podcast. And of course, this is the podcast where we have that honest conversation about how our digital world is actually impacting our real world. So as we said, in a very short time, we totally changed the way that we interact with one another, the way we communicate with one another, and the way humans communicate with one another actually is very shaping. The messages that we take in has a shaping effect on all of us and our very human experience. So as you know, in the first two seasons, it was important to hear directly from the teens and the young adults. My college students, as they're the first digitally socialized population. And it was really important to allow that population to be heard about how they were feeling. The crazy part was in 2021, we had the Facebook whistleblower come out saying, we're anxious, we're depressed, we've got all of these things going on. And it wasn't anything that we didn't know. We just have not made that part of the social consciousness. We haven't made that part of the social dialogue. And so really, really important to use any means possible to get the word out that our kids, the way we're feeling, the way we've been impacted by social media and the changing in digital communication is really having an impact on us more than just coming out with statistics. It's really important that we open up the conversation and talk about how that impact is really affecting our lives. And so in this third season, I'm so very excited to kick this season off with our very special series. And we've partnered with the Screen Time Action Network for, again, I said, it's really a powerful series of conversations with families and parents who have been through the absolute nightmare as a result of social media, and these stories just don't get out there. Gene Rogers is here as the director of the Screen Time Action Network, and this was your very important idea, and I'm so glad that we were able to partner up on this. Welcome to Gene, and tell me about how this idea came to you.
Thanks so much, Joni. It's great to be here with you, and for Know It for Life, we're grateful to have these stories told. We're grateful that we're at a turning point where awareness is so important. And we met you when you brought your documentary, Selling Your Soul, to our first conference in 2018. You were out there with these messages years ago, but as you and I both know, it takes years for awareness to take root. Mm. And more recently, with the recent release of The Social Dilemma, we saw another turning point. So Center for Humane Technology came to us and said, we have parents who've lost their children to social media bullying and other incidents. And I was heartbroken and a bit anxious to go there, to be honest with you. But I came to find, you know, the Action Network was founded on the hypothesis that there are many people out there who see these tragedies and feel isolated and feel as though they're only one small voice. And that if we come together, we're one large voice that can make this happen. So I found out that these parents, they didn't want to wallow. They want to change the system so that others don't suffer. It's very inspiring. And so we created the Cyberbullying and Online Safety Work Group here at the network, where these parents are now finding community. They're amplifying each other's voices and making progress and advocating for change. So it's one thing to read shocking headlines, but these stories are saying it happened to me. My son or my daughter is gone because of an algorithm. And their stories need telling, and we can't let these companies keep robbing people of their kids.
So powerful and chilling, actually. I remember when you called me saying, I have an idea. And I was apprehensive as well, thinking, I don't know, I'm a parent. And empathetically to listen to what a parent has gone through just seemed so overwhelming. But then you, again, we both have the spirit, you know, we have to take action on this, ergo the Screen Time Action Network. And that's what you're all about, is not just the awareness. It is all the work that you do, moving things and making change and making accountability and bringing awareness to some of the things that have been going on. Again, you guys have been doing the same thing. You've been talking about this forever and bringing the awareness and even making people accountable by changing policies as soon as you get it out there. And it was just, it was really heartbreaking to see the Senate hearings in 2021 with a congressional member with just some kind of poster board behind them with a stat on suicides or on anxiety and depression, as if it's just some number, but not really having an impact on our lives. Did you find that same, you know, irritation that I did, frustration?
Absolutely, Joni. And I think, you know, we were part of some of those hearings, but, and the stories were mentioned, but briefly. And we found, you know, we were able to prep our people to get out there in the major media, and then they get a 10-second clip. So I think the fact that you're able to tell these stories now in an intimate way, one person to one person, that can be so powerful, and it can turn these parents' grief into real change.
Right, right. So what we have coming up on in this three-part series is some of those elements that parents absolutely had no idea. There was a statistic that was released a few years ago. I remember speaking and using this when I was speaking to parents, that 93 to 96% of parents just don't know the hurt that their child is going through. So a lot of times parents use social media in a much different way than their children are using social media. So it's hard for a parent to really understand how different their kids, their teens, and young adults are using these platforms and what's happening to them while they're online, when a parent is like, well, gosh, I don't know, my business is thriving because I can put Facebook ads out there. It's just very, very different. And so what we learned here, and what became part of the working group, Gene, am I correct? We found out about the drugs that kids can get online and some of these challenges that seem, you know, silly to some people, but are deadly. And the cyberbullying. Tell me what you saw and what some of these issues that you're dealing with from the parents that you're talking to.
So, you know, Joni, when friends lived down the street or kids hung out at the skate park, parents could see and understand that environment. You know, they had limited physical environments to stay on top of for their kids. Now there's that huge disconnect that you just spoke about. What parents understand about these online worlds, when they can't see it, when it's inside a device where the kids are being sucked in. So, you know, access to drugs, which with deadly results, online games that seem funny to kids. And one thing's really important for our audience to understand is that developmentally, kids think they're invincible at this age. They don't understand that something is going to have an irreversible consequence. They're vulnerable to these really the business model that is making these algorithms available to them. They don't understand what's going to happen to them. And then families face the tragedy. The case of Carson Bride you'll hear about next is not only tragic because of what happened to Carson, but because, as with all these stories you're going to hear, all three in this series, they happen to very engaged parents, involved parents, parents who talked with their kids about social media, about drugs, about peers. And so it shows that the vulnerability is happening even when parents think they know as much as possible.
Right. And I think the scariest thing that I learned in doing these interviews was this is happening to the good kids, the good families. These are the strongest families with parents who did all the right things from what they were understanding, holding off on social media until they got older. I mean, did everything right. And I think that's what makes it most frightening and very sad to realize that we're not getting the information out there.
Now, and ruthless, really, you know, it's the cyberbullying is ruthless because and if you see, it's not what we would think stereotypically, and the same damage to self-esteem and the abuse happened to him.
And well, from people he knew.
From people that was, he knew.
You know, that he thought were his friends. And so, again, that's it's so endemic to what we're dealing with now, even getting into the loneliness epidemic, where who do you trust, right? And so social media came in, changed the way we communicate, and it also destroyed the way we build trust with one another. And when you don't have trust, you don't have intimacy, and you feel like you're all alone. We really need to closely examine how we're communicating and behaving with one another and how this is impacting us when it comes from the digital world. Okay, so I am so glad that you're going to be joining us for the next 3 episodes here, and we're going to start things off right now. I'd like to introduce you to Kristen Bride. Kristen, let's start with you. I want to focus on, you know, the parents for people who have really been impacted by this and hearing the real stories from those whose lives have been changed.
Yes, there's no one that has been more impacted by the results of social media than my family. On June 23rd, 2020, I woke up to find my son hanging in the garage, and I had absolutely no idea that he was being cyberbullied for weeks. His last searches on his phone was to find out who was anonymously cyberbullying him. We definitely feel like this was a trigger. And this, we were a family that were very cautious about social media. Carson was the last kid in his class to get a phone. They started it as early as 4th grade, and we waited until 8th grade. We talked about all the things that can go wrong with social media, with, you know, he had incidents in his class where kids were sending around pornographic photos. And so we didn't really take time to lecture, but we always had dinner together, and we talked about what can really go wrong in the future. That you putting something out there, it's permanent. And I made signs for both of my sons over their computers that said, don't say or type anything online that you don't want on a billboard with your name and face next to. As a reminder, we talked about kids that were older that were trying to get jobs, and they had gone through the whole employment process only to find out they didn't get the job because of what was posted on their Facebook. So we tried to emphasize how serious it was. And in the end, I am really proud of Carson and how he handled it. He did listen to me. He didn't lower himself to his abusers. And he wanted them to swipe up and talk it out, identify themselves to talk it out. You know, this was something that I, as a parent, always dreaded. Like you said, Tom, my husband and I went back to our college to just kind of walk around years later. And we saw that the kids were walking together, but they weren't interacting. They were walking and looking at their phones. And I just dreaded the thought of having my kids be on a phone. You know, fortunately, my older son was an engineer and focused on robotics, and he did not care for the drama. So he did have Snapchat and Instagram, but he had all the notifications turned off. So he didn't see what was happening to Carson, because he just didn't have the bandwidth for it. He's kind of a wise old soul. And I actually talked to him this weekend, and it was encouraging. He's an engineering major, and he said that now in his major, kids are actually getting phone numbers and they're texting each other, and the Snapchat thing is going away. So I hope that kids can evolve past this when they become adults. You know, and Carson and I were really close. Like he told me all the things that happened that hurt him in person at school, and found out after his death that the parents of the aggressor were never told. And so that has led to Carson's Law in the state of Oregon, which now requires school districts to tell parents when there's reports of bullying, both the aggressor and the target. So I think there's something for him to be so honest with me about bad days at school, and for him not to come forward with what was happening online, shows that there's a real difference there. The kids went to at-home learning. And honestly, I was thrilled because I could have both my boys home, and I didn't have to worry about where Carson was having lunch, who he was having lunch with, anyone being mean to him in the hallways. He was a sensitive kid. He was small in stature. He wanted to be connected like so many, many kids.
So like every human on the planet.
Right, every human on the planet. So we went home. We had online Scrabble game going as a family. We did puzzles. We watched movies. I tried to get the boys out running with me. And I thought that, you know, everything was going okay. Carson did express to me, I can't believe this, but I'm really missing in-person school. And so I think it was then that he started reaching out to his Snapchat friends. He had a private Snapchat account. And these were his classmates at school, and trying to engage in conversations. And what he was getting back was anonymous feedback that was sexually explicit. It was humiliating. They mentioned at one point he had passed out in a class. He had fainted. And the kids were talking anonymously about all the sexual acts they performed on him when he was passed out on the floor. And I know that that was a really scary experience for him, fainting and falling on a concrete floor. So I'm sure that that was really humiliating. There was, you know, threatening comments, and he kept saying, just swipe out, swipe up and identify yourself. Clearly you have a beef with me. I want to talk it out. And he handled it so well, but he was handling it quietly. And the only thing I can think is that, you know, we had talked so much about the problems with social media and all the problems that can arise. And what I've learned afterwards is that the majority of kids don't report to their parents because they're afraid of either being a snitch or having the parents say, I told you so. And I think the thought was probably, you know, I'm going to have my phone taken away. I mean, I think we would have taken away his phone, but we would have really questioned whether this was healthy interaction. So he was dealing with this alone, unfortunately, that he was reaching out to people he trusted to find out who was doing this to him. And I think one of the most shocking things that happened to me, because my husband and I are older parents, and so we're not addicted to Facebook, taking pictures of our food and posting online like actually some younger parents are. We don't have our phones always with us. We really use it to call somebody. It makes it really difficult to relate intergenerationally about this. A student came over from his class after his death and we were talking, and they are very popular and a great student. And they mentioned that they saw what was happening to Carson, and they said, if I had received what Carson had received, I would consider taking my life. And that made this real for me in a way that, I mean, if this was something that a popular student was feeling, I can only imagine what Carson was going through, where he wasn't successful socially. And then to have all these comments come at him, there were nearly 100. And then in one day, 40, all negative.
I would think that anybody, adult, who did not grow up on social media, if you are receiving that level of aggression, particularly from people that you thought you were trusting, particularly from people that are your friends, how could you react? Just, it doesn't fall off your shoulders like that. It gets internalized. It's damaging. I mean, it's damaging when you get, you know, one comment from somebody that you believe in. This is such like a massive assault mm-hmm. on somebody's spirit, that the pain that that assault creates just leaves people so lonely and so helpless and in such pain that we know suicide is the result of enormous pain. Just, I need it to stop, mm-hmm. you know, without being able to find a roadway off, right?
Right.
And so where has this been in the social norms to really, really address the honesty about the downside?
Right. You know, I was watching the Facebook whistleblower hearings, and Frances said something that just really hit home, is that, and she was addressing cyberbullying, that kids are being cruel to each other. The last thing they see before they go to bed is cruelty. The first thing they see when they wake up. And what they're learning is that their friends who they trust can be cruel to them. And what is that going to mean for relationships as they become adults? And I do think, like, if it were us, like, this was our personal friend list, and if suddenly they all started coming at us as adults anonymously with hurtful, aggressive, sexually explicit, horrible comments, it would be devastating to us as adults.
Right, right. And I guess, you know, I get very frustrated with, we have known this line of questioning about the impact. It seemed like no matter how many times you wanted to be able to have the honest conversation, that, you know, there's a really negative side. You know, mm-hmm. there's really a we all know the good things. We know that, you know, social media can grant you fame and fortune. Got it. We get plenty of information on that. But as soon as you start to say, can we peel back the layers, and can we really have this honest conversation? Let's be real. Over the past 10, 15 years, we have been seeing the mental health decline of the population who is using this more than any other population. Why are we not addressing that? And I guess I was getting so furious as to listening to the news coverage of this, And I'm like screaming at the TV going, can we actually talk about the mental health illnesses? Like, can we talk about the impact rather than, you know, just what they knew and when they knew it and how we've all known it. We've mm-hmm. all known it. We've known it for since 2006. A year before Facebook came out, we were having these conversations about the way we shift, the way we communicate. The line of questioning that I've had is on the communication part, right? So just what you were saying, Kristen, what happens to us as a human when we communicate behind the screen in anonymity? What happens to the one who's actually doing the communicating? You know, why, what brings out that dark side of us? That I've had students coming to me crying, saying like, I think I was kind of mean or I was a bully, or, and I'm like, what do you think it was? What made you mean? You know, and that's a whole other line of research and questioning, but there is something behind the keyboard courage that just mm-hmm. exacerbates the ugly, our dark thoughts, which every human has. You know, the dark thoughts are human, but the conduit to allow those dark thoughts to impact another person is a whole new conversation.
And I think it's not seeing the face of the person you're hurting. Mm-hmm. Not getting that feedback. And without that, it dehumanizes.
It's so dehumanizing. What did you learn, Kristen, through your experience from other parents that you talked to? What was your experience as a parent going through this? And what happened after Carson's death? Was there ramifications at the school? I'm not sure what you can talk about, but if there are things that you can share with other parents.
Yeah, we didn't know that this was happening until a couple weeks after his death, and word started spreading through the community that Carson had been bullied on two anonymous apps, YOLO and LMK, that connect to the back end of Snapchat. And so we ended up talking to the school about wanting an investigation, because Carson didn't have a public account. So this wasn't coming from people all over the world. This was coming from his Snapchat friends. Mm. And so we provided that list to the school. And this is the problem with anonymous apps is, when I found out that it was YOLO, I went on his phone and I emailed YOLO telling them about what happened to my son. And my concern was that these kids had gotten away with it. They have policies on YOLO that if there's bullying, they will reveal the names of those who are being the aggressors. And so that's what I was asking for, because I think the kids who did this to him needed to be held accountable, and we needed to make sure that they weren't doing this to other kids. And I did not get a response back three times. And then I even had Josh Golan from Fair Play connect with Gregoire Honran, who is the CEO of YOLO, over LinkedIn. And he said, you need to get back to this mother. And I did not hear anything. And that was a really hard time for me to realize that I lived in a country where my son died from a product that was created, and I can't even get a response. I mean, it doesn't get worse than this. And I thought about the kids who were going through this. If I can't get a response as a parent, I can't even imagine what it's like for the kids who are trying to figure out who is doing this. And so that's where I'm just somebody who can't let it go. I just couldn't just sit back and realize that's okay. This is the way it is. And I just have to deal with it. And so I watched The Social Dilemma and I reached out to the Center for Humane Technology. And after this experience with YOLO, I thought I would not hear back, but they got back to me right away. They connected me with executives. They connected me with Fair Play, the Children's Screen Time Action Network. And that's how I got involved in the work group that we're on cyber harm. And they asked me to speak at one of their symposiums. I wanted a response. I felt like my son deserved a response from them. And it was very difficult to just live with that. And, you know, unfortunately, it takes a lawsuit. The happiest day of my life since Carson's death was the day that we filed the lawsuit and Snapchat took down LMK and YOLO so that the kids no longer had access to it. The anonymous apps.
Amazing. I mean, that's amazing. I want to get into that, but you just sparked a thought that I had that was making me absolutely insane in the September 30th hearings with the Facebook head of safety who was like, I'm a mom. And every time there was a question in regard to the use of Facebook, I found a pattern of her response was always something about, well, the parents can sit next to the child and the parents can And I was like, no. How about the product? You know, I remember for years and years when I would be speaking about this, even my own students would be saying, well, what about the parents? And it's like, okay, there's only so much we can do. And I gave the analogy of a parent in a rushing river with pollution coming at us and your kids behind you. And like, there's only so much you can do to filter the flood of negativity that is coming at you trying to protect your child. And, you know, over the years, it's why we had the FDA. It's why we had the FTC. We had regulations in place to filter harmful elements that we would consume.
Okay. And I do want to bring up the point that they still had Send It on their back end, Snapchat did, which is an anonymous app. If I can just talk generically about what social media is doing to schools, because there's a lot of anonymous posts or pages with gossip, the administrators are spending hours of their time trying to contact these companies to have them taken down. And this is something that through our work group, Joni, I'm trying to bring awareness to, is I think the taxpayers need to know how much time is spent from on the downwind harm that social media is creating in school and the negative effects and the drama. I mean, there's so many different examples of it, and the letters and it is taking a lot of their time. And that's something that I would love to see calculated, because I think that this would bring a lot of awareness. We don't want our school administrators spending time on figuring out who did what on social media, because we want them spending time on education in our country. Right.
You had an opportunity to do your victim's impact statement to people that will really hear it at some point. What is it that you would really be moved to say?
We live with this every day. It's the first thing I think of when I wake up. I had a parent tell me that it's called a daymare. You know, when you're dreaming, I remember Carson, you know, he's in my dream. So when I wake up, the reality that he's gone and he's gone forever, it becomes a daymare. It just so many emotions. This has impacted our family so much. And I'm on year two, and it has been harder this year than the first year. And I hear this from parents. I talked to another parent. She's on year four, and she said she's still in purgatory. It's all I think about. It's a horrible way to live. It was horrible that this happened to him. And I just hope that we can make a positive change in the world as a result. I mean, that's really the only thing that keeps me going, and not just sitting in bed and crying, but telling his story. He wanted his story told. And we miss him. And we hope that people learn from this. And the message we're trying to give out is that in the end, kindness really does matter. How you treat people really matters. So I hope that everybody thinks about what they say and what they write, and how they would feel about that with their name and face on a billboard. I know Carson did at the end. I know I made that impact on him, and I'm proud of him. But the loss is just something, it's indescribable.
I can't even begin to grasp the level of pain that you and your family have been going through. But I do want to give you an opportunity and document your thoughts, perhaps, on your feelings towards an industry that seemed to classify damaging elements as some kind of unintended consequences. As you and I, Kristen, have talked about, I talked about Tyler Clementi a decade ago, and never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that this could still be an issue that there's been such a blind eye turned to stories that have made it to the public arena, and that there's still, there was no, a rare application of ethical and moral application to policies.
Mm-hmm. The type of drama and harassment that Carson received before he took his life is what draws eyeballs to these screens. And in many ways, I think the products are designed this way, so that they have more users, more people watching this, and they're profiting from it. They're profiting, and they're putting profit over people. And there are real lives. And, you know, Carson is no longer, but there are also a lot of kids out there that are psychologically damaged by this, and the abuse that they received online. And this is just not, I think, what we want to create in a generation going forward. And so I'm very hopeful that a movement is starting. And with the Kids Act, we need to have the FTC or a regulatory body made up of people that are experts that worked in these companies regulate these products and have them do risk assessments before they put them out there. And I would be really happy to see that. And they need to follow their own policies. If they have policies that say they moderate for bullying, they need to do it. If they have policies like Yolo did, saying that they would reveal the identities of bullies, then they need to do it. They can't just say it.
Thank you so much for listening to the No App for Life podcast. And again, thank you so much to Gene Rogers at Children's Screen Time Action Network. Gene, I want to make sure that people have an opportunity to get in touch with you and a little bit more about the network.
Joni, I'm so glad that No App for Life was able to give voice to these stories. Again, just remembering these are very involved parents. They talk with their kids about social media, about drugs, about these challenges, and it's still happening. So we're here to give them a voice, to give them a space. At the Screen Time Action Network, we have 7 work groups on different topics, and they're really the heart of the network, where if people want to get involved, if they want to take action, we will support that action. We will support you becoming a member of the network and becoming a member of a work group. So you join by visiting us at screentimenetwork.org. Membership is free. We have a great resource library where you can access some articles on the topics that you've heard here at No App for Life, and we would love to have you join us.
Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the No App for Life podcast.